Please join me in the responsive invocation, which is printed in your order of service. We gather to seek, to find, and to share the promise of honest religion. And so it is a sacred time, this, and a sacred place, this. Vulnerability more powerful than strength. It is a sacred time, this. Let us begin it together in song.
The reading today is Impassioned by Clay by Ralph N. Helverson. Deep in ourselves resides the religious impulse. Out of the passions of our clay, it rises. We have religion when we stop deluding ourselves that we are self-sufficient, self-sustaining, or self-derived. We have religion when we hold some hope beyond the present, some self-respect beyond our failures. We have religion when our hearts are capable of leaping up at beauty, when our nerves are edged by some dream in our heart. We have religion when we have an abiding gratitude for all that we have received. We have religion when we look upon people with all their failings and still see in them good. When we look beyond people to the grandeur in nature and to the purpose in our own heart. We have religion when we have done all that we can, and then in confidence entrust ourselves to the life that is larger than ourselves.
We invite you into a time of centering, a time of quiet reflection. This is a time to connect or reconnect to that which is most important to you right now. You're invited to do this by lighting a candle by the window or by sitting in quiet contemplation. I invite you now to join me in prayer. As we take this time, may we become in touch with the deepest desires of our hearts and memories of our minds. We are creatures with knowledge of the past and hopes for the future. In recalling our past, may we find the humility to learn from both our failures and our success. In anticipating our future, may we find the strength and courage to challenge ourselves to become more how we desire to be. As the adversities of our life remind us of our illusions of control and delusions of independence, may they also remind us of those who can help us and our interdependence with others. In times of our greatest vulnerability and uncertainty, may we remember the moments of our highest resolve. And in doing so, may our life be the embodiment of our highest ideals and an inspiration to all around us. Amen. As we approach the end of the calendar year, I find myself thinking about that difficult subject, time. The year 2009 is almost upon us, and I'm one of those people who hasn't quite got used to it being the 21st century. And will soon be entering the second decade. But when I talk about the difficulty of time, I don't just mean the shortage of time or how it seems to go by so quickly. I have that constant struggle of being in the present. My mind is constantly planning ahead to the short-term tasks, like I'm already thinking about lunch, and the longer-term plans for next year, like where am I going to get a job? When not thinking about a future, then my mind, I think about the decisions of the past, like the good ones, moving to Texas 4 months ago, and then the regrets, like, why did I think this would be a good sermon topic? My mind seems to be make only fleeting visits to the present, you know, before concerning itself with thoughts for the future and memories of the past. Midnight on Wednesday, the calendar flips to another year that will be both a mixture of poignancy for the past and also hopes and perhaps some anxiety for the future. For some of us, we will be happy to see the back of 2008 for the hardships and losses we experienced then. For others, we will reflect on a year well lived and approach the new year filled with anticipation and enthusiasm. Many of us enter the new year with externally imposed changes upon us, which we have little control over. As I consider my own situation here as your ministerial intern, I'm in the middle of the year of my internship. I'm ending it here at First Austin, and I'm beginning it simultaneously at Live Oak. I now understand the French film director Jean-Luc Godard's phrase, a story should have a beginning, a middle, and an end, but not necessarily in that order. My current situation is simultaneously a beginning, a middle, and an end. Time is a tricky concept. The end of the calendar year also imposes on our lives transition points, often artificially, as work contracts and projects end for the Christmas break. Even Christmas itself often imposes artificial deadlines upon us. And the busyness of the Christmas season can often blind us to seeing past Christmas to the time ahead. It is difficult to plan when you can't see beyond such a major event as Christmas. At this time between Christmas and New Year is when much of our time and energy is to take measure of where we are and look towards the future. The month of January is a somewhat arbitrary beginning of the year, since it does not correspond to the beginning of an agricultural season, that would be spring, or an astronomical cycle. The month of January is named after the Roman god Janus, who had two faces which allowed him to look simultaneously forward to the future and behind to the past. The traditions of New Year's resolutions also began with the god Janus. And when taken seriously, New Year resolutions are about looking at the behaviours of the past and envisioning how we could possibly do better in the future. As individuals, many of us in small ways and sometimes significant ways undertake New Year resolutions. You're probably familiar with some of the most common ones: losing weight, getting fit, eating better, quitting smoking, drinking less alcohol, paying off debt, spending more time with the family, volunteering to help others more, and maybe just being less grumpy. Some of these might be useful goals for some of us, and probably very similar goals to last year, and the year before, and the year before that. Or perhaps that's just me. I actually thought I might take up smoking this year just so I could give it up and fulfill one of my resolutions. Hey, I've succeeded. Of course, the joke of so much of our New Year resolutions is how little time it takes to fail in keeping them and how we desire the same resolutions every year. There's a whole industry around this, such as gym membership, which skyrockets in January as the next cycle of resolutions for weight loss and better fitness begins. While the idea of New Year resolutions can be shrugged off as just another silly example of human nature and the large disconnect between our spoken desires and what we really want to do, I do think the idea touches on a real desire for many of us to live a better life and the great difficulty we have in doing so. Our Unitarian tradition of the 19th and 20th century has focused on the self-improvement of the person, and this has often been summarized as salvation by character. Salvation in our Unitarian tradition was about individuals improving themselves and working towards their own and others' moral improvement. We moved the emphasis from a faith in and obedience to a God, to an emphasis in improving ourselves to become better, more ethical people. And this improvement was often expressed as becoming more godlike. The 19th century Unitarian minister William Ellery Channing said, "To honour God is to approach God as an inexhaustible fountain of light, power, and unity. It is to feel the quickening and transforming energy of his perfections. It is to thirst for the growth and invigoration of the divine principle within us, and to seek the very Spirit of God, which proposes at its great end the perfection of the human soul." To seek the very Spirit of God, which proposes at its great end the perfection of the human soul. Those were the words of William Ellery Channing. Now, I think it's fair to say that most people do not think of their New Year resolutions as the perfecting of the human soul. Yet, in their own way, New Year resolutions are about becoming a better person, physically, mentally, and even spiritually. I wonder if the reason we do not take our resolutions or other desires for change seriously is that we do not aim high enough with them, and we do not demand enough of ourselves in fulfilling our resolutions. The desire for human improvement in our Unitarian tradition led to a great emphasis on the education of people. The belief is still strong in our movement, with our strong support and belief in the public education of all. For example, today our Split the Plate donation is going towards the American Nepali Student and Women's Education Relief Organization. This group, who have a booth in the gallery, supports with half of our offering today, and it supports 12 to 15 years of education for children from the lower castes of Nepal. Our tradition of human improvement and belief in education has taken on a global perspective today, showing a growing focus for our social justice work that is in keeping with our religious tradition. As someone who was the first generation of my family to attend college, I know of the transformative effects and opportunities that that brings. And religion, for many of us, is about the transformation of the individual and our community. Transformation for individuals generally comes as a result of an interaction of external circumstances and our internal motivations. Many people come into our religious community desiring change in their lives, perhaps by seeking a community to which they can explore spiritual questions, perhaps to engage in social justice work, or to find meaning and truth in the changes they experience in their own lives. All of these can be acts of transformation. The struggle many of us have in enacting transformations within ourselves is, how do we often go from our vague desires for change into more firm beliefs until these beliefs become habits? I learned something about this struggle during my chaplaincy training last year, when I was working with military veterans who had mental health concerns and addictions. By the time I was working with them, many had reached a crisis in their life due to addiction and were desperate for help. There was a common pattern where there was a tendency for them to either blame everyone else or to blame themselves for all failings. Much of the work I did was to explore where the blame should belong, and then encourage these people to take responsibility for what was appropriately theirs. Through the 12-step program of Alcoholics Anonymous, there was a strong group support for the patient and the encouraging of humility in admitting the need for help from a higher power. For many of the people I worked with, they had admitted they were powerless to resist alcohol and chose to replace their addiction to alcohol with a healthier, higher power, which often gave them a strength to address their addiction. The major lesson I learned from these veterans was how they struggled with their addiction every day. As one of them said to me, "The difficulty is not to stop drinking, but to stay sober every day. Stopping drinking isn't hard. Not starting again is." The discipline of choosing every day not to drink for them was a huge act of self-control, and I believe it was a spiritual discipline. In our liberal religious tradition, much of our religion is to guide us in how we act and how we should make decisions. I see a commonality between how our religion guides us to enact changes in our own lives and how those 12-step programs were attempting to help address people with their addictions. To take a vague desire of how I wish to be different and change it into a belief that I will act on daily requires a commitment from me and a support of my community, which will hold me accountable. Enacting these beliefs in my words and actions is a daily spiritual discipline I engage in and often fail at. As I fail to live up to my beliefs, I am fortunate that the consequences for me are not nearly as severe as those who struggle with addictions and those who I served as chaplain to. I deal with my disappointment, reflect on why I fail to live up to my expectations, then I begin the cycle again. By letting go of any attachment towards any need of perfection and just focus on some improvement allows me to show compassion for myself and stay engaged in changing my beliefs and habits. This model of action, reflection, and action again, with the consistent emphasis on improvement, not perfection, is a simple yet significant approach for me to enact within my life. For many Unitarian Universalists, it can be hard for us to settle on simple improvement and not obsess about perfection. It is said that the pursuit of excellence is gratifying and healthy. The pursuit of perfection is frustrating, neurotic, and a terrible waste of time. In this vein, I want to share with you a resolution I arrived at that guides much of my life. There's a lot of talk, at least amongst us seminarians, that we really need to find some guiding principles to help people in their life. Of course, I undertook this project with serious academic rigor, hoping to arrive at some weighty, profound ethical principle. The outcome was somewhat disappointing. My guiding principle is that I only want to make brand new mistakes. That's it. The satisfaction of making the same mistakes as others is a shallow and frustrating consolation. I don't want to make the same mistake as others by reinventing another broken wheel. I want to make new mistakes. And by not wanting to make the mistakes of the past, then I learn from history. And by accepting that I am going to make mistakes, albeit new ones, allows me to move forward into unknown areas and overcome any fear of failure. I have actually found this seemingly superficial guiding principle of only making new mistakes to be quite liberating. This thinking may also be beneficial for organizations such as a religious community. Organizations seem to settle into a common behavioral pattern which prevents change and seems to condition any new person to conform to the expected behavior of the organization. Yet if the goal of a religious organization is individual and community growth, then we want an organizational structure that encourages change of the individual and we knew of the organization itself, not stifled transformations. A community that learns from its past and takes risks moving forward will make brand new mistakes by pushing new boundaries. If we wish to make brand new mistakes, then we have to overcome our resistance to change as individuals and as a religious community. And what is so bad about a mistake, especially a brand new one? As adults, we become very conscious of what others think of us, and we often wish to appear, or we often do not wish to appear less than competent. If you ask a group of kindergarten children whether they can dance or sing, they will all enthusiastically say yes and be very quickly show you. You do not get the same response with adults. As we get older, our inhibitions seem to set in and our desire to try new activities or approach or new approaches diminishes. We encourage children to make mistakes and to learn. We develop for them compassionate boundaries for them to push against, and we support them in their failures and struggles. As adults, we seem to lose the ability to appear vulnerable and fallible. I feel we limit ourselves by not allowing ourselves to make mistakes. As the poem Susie read for us earlier said, we have religion when we stop deluding ourselves that we are self-sufficient, self-sustaining, or self-derived. We have religion when we hold some hope beyond the present, some respect beyond our failures. There is a myth of competency we wish to project. Yet I think most of us have learned more from our mistakes than our successes. Those times we pushed ourselves into unknown areas, further than we intended beyond our comfort zone. By doing so, we grow as people as we break down those barriers we have raised for ourselves or others attempted to impose upon us. Mistakes are almost a prerequisite for growth and success. Michael Jordan, the great basketball player, said, "I've missed more than 9,000 shots in my career. I've lost almost 300 games. 26 times I've been trusted to take the game-winning shot and missed. I've failed over and over and over again in my life. And that is why I succeed." I would venture to say that perhaps the only real failure is not an attempt, is to not attempt to do something that you really wish to do. When you think about our own life, then we really regret what we did. Now, I'm limiting this to only legal things. Our major regrets are those times where we did not do something when we had the opportunity to do so. Even when our efforts do not work out, then we generally learn something, even if it's not to do that again. When we choose not to even attempt something for fear of failure, then our learning opportunity is missed. Of course, to accept the possibility of our making a mistake involves us willing to take a risk. The following words from the poem, To Risk, capture much of our struggles concerning our aversion to risk. To laugh is to risk appearing the fool. To weep is to risk being appearing sentimental. To reach out for another is to risk exposing ourselves. To place our ideals, our dreams before the crowd is to risk loss. To love is to risk not being loved in return. To hope is to risk despair. To try is to risk failure. To live is to risk dying. I would say that all of these actions, to laugh, weep, reach out, dream, love, hope, try, are acts of coming alive and truly living. They all involve a risk, but a risk of what? Appearing foolish or sentimental, not being loved, exposing our true feelings. These may be sources of discomfort, but are not character flaws. By growing from and beyond our failures and mistakes, we are coming alive to all of life's possibilities. With knowledge of the past and imagination for the future, we can make our whole life a spiritual practice, breaking down the artificial barriers between the sacred and secular, between ourselves and others. In doing so, we awaken our soul to the excitement and nourishment of a complete spiritual life. Response of benediction, which is in your order of service. We leave this sacred time together.
Spirit with us.
Our world needs us and the Spirit we carry forth.
Let us become the light, the truth, and the meaning that we seek.
Amen.